Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On today's podcast, Adam Richard returns for our Mission Impossible series as we tackle Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I want you to know I am the Storm here on Big Squid. This episode of Mission Impossible might be the most childish episode we've recorded yet. So just a warning before I even say hello. It is really, really childish. It goes so far off the rails. And I'm not going to point out where. You'll know. It's pretty obvious. And anyway, I have to point out, we had a good time with the movie. This is not a reflection on the film. I just think we were both in a pretty silly mood, and you'll hear it kick in. Anyway, we're doing this one today, then Fallout next week, and then Adam and I will sync our crazy schedules so we can see Dead Reckoning Part 1 and report to you what we think of this new film. So that's the plan going forward. It was one of those things where we had all the time in the world, and then this year's been such a weird year. It's been hard to get our schedules in line, and suddenly the new one's coming out really soon. So there you go. Before we launch into today's episode, when you sign up for our Patreon, you can not only access a bunch of bonus podcasts and more, but you also have an episode dedicated to you. And today's shout out goes to Liz. No last name either. She's the Madonna Cher Pele of the Big Squid Patreon list. Hi, Liz. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. I hope you've been enjoying the Mission Impossible series. And fingers crossed, your sense of humor is as childish as this episode devolves into. I apologize in advance, but maybe you'll find it as funny as Adam and I did. I hope so. Anyway, thank you for being a Patreon subscriber, Liz, and I look forward to hearing your remarks on this episode and any other thoughts that you might have about the stuff that we're covering here. If you'd like to have an episode dedicated to you and have access to bonus podcasts, please head to patreon.com/Justin Hamilton, and you can find a tier that suits you. Now it's time to check in with the IMF, who have not only been disbanded, but they've left Ethan Hunt out in the cold. Oh no! Now a new threat known as the Syndicate has emerged, a highly skilled group of operatives dedicated to establishing a new world order. Ethan must gather his team and join forces with the mysterious Ilse Faust to once again save the day. Let's enter the world of Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
The IMF is uniquely trained and highly motivated. Specialist without equal, immune to any countermeasures. But it is an agency of chaos.
The time has come to dissolve the IMF.
Now I want you to choose your next words very carefully. Where is Hunt?
Last I heard, he was tracking the Syndicate.
How come the CIA has never discovered any intel regarding this Syndicate?
You want the polite answer or the truth?
We've never met before, right? follow me.
Benji.
Ethan, where are you?
The Syndicate is real. A rogue nation trained to do what we do.
An anti-IMF. Ready or not,
here I come. They're coming after us with everything they've got.
You ready?
This may very well be our last mission. Let's make it count.
So what's the play?
You want to bring down the Syndicate? It's impossible. Ready or not, here I come. Can't hide.
Gonna find you and take it slowly.
How do you know we can trust her?
Desperate times. Desperate measures.
You have your seatbelt on?
You asking me that now?
Oh, hey, boys, what did I miss? Ethan?
Benji! Open the door! Open the door!
Yeah, I'm trying.
Oh, my God!
I have two quick things for you, one that kind of relates to Mission Impossible and one that doesn't. This is just something that I found just before we started recording.
Right.
And I was closing up screens on my computer, and then on Twitter, Eyes Wide Shut was trending.
That happens sometimes. You're like, why this movie today?
Yeah. What a okay. So I recently rewatched that, maybe about 6 or 7 months ago, and I was like, oh, what's this about? And of course, it's, you know, being used as an example to prove that the Vatican and the American government and the mafia and blockchain and everyone are working together. And, you know, people didn't realize until they saw Eyes Wide Shut, and then they went, oh, right. Okay. But
is this like Stanley Kubrick having filmed the moon landing?
Yes, in a yes. Cupboard?
Yeah. Cool.
Well, this is even better. So this was, so I was just kind of laughing as I was reading it. And then this one guy has put up this this post, and he says, Kubrick had full creative control of all his films and did very secretive shoots. He had to hand in the rough final cut of Eyes Wide Shut to film executives, and within a week had died of a heart attack. It could be coincidence, but ... And then he's put up this picture of a man. It's a black and white photo of two men in suits. One's holding a gun, and the heading is the CIA's heart attack gun. They can make your murder look natural. And underneath it says, in 1975, this formerly secret CIA weapon was declassified. The information about this weapon comes from US Senate testimony in 1975 relating to rogue activities of the CIA. This video shows actual congressional testimony explaining how the heart attack gun works. The heart attack gun shoots a small poison dart that is made of ice. The poison causes a heart attack. Then the dart melts and the poison denatures, so there is nothing that shows up in autopsy. The end. Joe Rogan's trending as well. I wonder if they're related.
I read a very funny tweet about Joe Rogan today that said, you know, before the internet, no one needed Joe Rogan because everyone had a stoner older brother that was really into the pyramids being alien spaceships.
Yeah. Yeah, mate, we've all read the Illuminati. We get it, mate. We get it. So anyway, well, I guess it kind of fits in. Maybe they need to bring in the heart attack gun into the Mission Impossible world.
Heart attack. I just...
So good.
The melting ice is my favorite. Like, how...
That's...
How does they keep it frozen for so long? They're going to carry around a little portable freezer?
Right, in a little Esky.
For the heart attack gun.
Like, it made me laugh so hard because just the words heart attack gun made me laugh, and I decided I was going to read it out to you. And then the little ice dart was the
Kappa.
Pistol resistance.
Like that's That's clearly a joke because that's a very funny punchline.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Heart attack gun just makes me think of your heart bum machine and I can't.
Yeah. It's been one of those, for everyone listening, my mate Charlie Hill Smith and I, you always used to talk about having a heart bum machine. And it was just, it was kind of just shorthand for you had a big night. That's basically what it was. But the amount of people, just to keep me alive. But I never got bored of people asking me how it worked.
Yeah.
And when you'd say, it's a machine that attaches your heart to your bum, and then watching them be even more confused brought real joy to me.
It doesn't make sense, Justin. Well, let me explain it to you. It still doesn't make sense. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but you breathe in gas and you fart and it pumps your heart. And that generates more gas and you fart. It's a perpetual machine. Jesus, why are people so stupid?
Get them with the heart attack gun. They've got to...
shoot some ice darts into those arseholes.
Got my esky full of ammunition. Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Yeah. If you ever see me turn up with an esky, you know someone's about to go down. So good.
Those little silver pouches that they...
Oh, yeah. Just in the pot. I'll just put it in a bum bag in the front and be ready to go. So I had something else for you, which is from my dear friend Susie, who, because, you know, we always talk about when we first saw this movie. We saw this one together. And but I thought I'd read out one for you, which was, Susie wrote to me and said, when her husband Stu and her first moved in together, we undertook a summer of Tom where we watched all the Cruise movies in order of release. This project was very much led by Stu, but I loved a challenge and embraced the good and the bad, and let's agree that there are some Cruise movies best left in the past. Yeah. But she was one of our Patreon shout-outs, so they are now doing a rewatch of the film. Yeah. So I was like, could you imagine doing a what's the Tom Cruise movie that you would be dreading if you were rewatching every Tom Cruise movie?
Probably Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Especially since I loved that TV show. Like, I really enjoyed that. I thought Sam Raid did a great job with that character. I just, just, you know, we know that Tom's had no chemistry with a lot of women. Also has no chemistry with Brad Pitt, which is amazing to me.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Like, you're working really hard. Really hard.
Have you got no chemistry there either? What is going on?
It's my argument that Michelle Monaghan is the most underrated actor in Hollywood, because I actually do believe he cares for her.
But yeah, that's probably the one I would be like. Also, I loved those books around that time.
Right.
So yeah, when that movie came out, I was like, what? How can I have Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Christian Slater, Antonio Banderas, and be really dull?
Yeah. Like, that's an effort. Who would you have had playlist at?
Back then? Going by the books? David Bowie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because the second book, he's pretty much described as Bowie. Like, it's very, kind of ageless and, you know, sexy and... kind of a bit androgynous and, you know, men and women alike kind of into him. So, yeah, it was very – that was all I could imagine when I read the book. So
– yeah, right.
Yeah.
And he was off making The Hunger with Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon. Yeah.
Like, just pop him in a blonde wig. Like, imagine.
Yeah. He'll be fine. Yeah. And then they'll all have flirted with him. They wouldn't have been able to not flirt with him.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get into a couple of the segments. Stamp that passport. Locations that we may or may not have visited. Minsk, Belarus.
No, never been there.
No. London, England. Yes, we're both a yes for that.
I lived there for 2 years.
Yeah, right. When was that?
Very early 90s, like 91, 92.
Yeah.
As a teenager.
Good time to be there too, right?
Yeah, it was exciting. Although Doctor Who had been cancelled, so like I didn't get to do any fun stuff like that. I did go to the London Cartoon Centre, though, do some like classes and stuff. That was fun.
Yeah. Was it? That's a big time for 2000 AD, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's getting a lot of attention. And
I mean, they had recently lost all of their creative staff to the US.
It was, that's true.
But yeah, it was like I got to meet some interesting people. I got to meet a writer who used to work with Clive Barker. I think he used to write his Nightbreed comics and stuff. So yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. Clive Barker. There's an interesting writer who... Like, he's still... Is he big still, or what is he? Like, he was kind of the enfant terrible for a while there. And then, I remember the Books of Blood. I remember the quote was from Stephen King saying it was the scariest thing that he'd read in years.
Yeah, he was huge for a while. Is he doing stuff? Who knows what he's up to?
I don't know. All his books were kind of sexy scary, weren't they? Like, they were very... which I think is, look, I'm taking a guess with this, probably why they were big in the UK and moderately big in the US, because Americans are, for the most part, weird with sex.
Also, didn't he like, didn't he come out at some point and the Americans all turned on him?
That sounds about right. So, yes to London. Washington, D.C.?
I haven't done that coast.
I've been slow on this one. Havana, Cuba?
No,
neither have I. Vienna, Austria?
I would love to, just to go on a full Von Trapp tour, but no, I have not.
Yep. And Casablanca?
Casablanca, in Morocco. That's right. I forgot to go to Casablanca.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all of it. I've seen the movie. Does that count?
There's no underwater hard drive facility in the movie.
Yeah. Well, we will get to that moment of panic in a sec. So segment, the year in action. So this movie comes out and we get in the same year, Furious 7.
Oh, really? These movies feel completely divorced from each other, but there you go.
Yeah, I know. Furious 7, Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, wow, was that recent? For some reason, this film feels older than that. That is weird.
I know. I have to be honest, this list of movies weirded me out because some of them feel really recent and some of them feel much older. And so it didn't quite make sense. Sicario.
Oh, yeah. Denis Villeneuve. Yeah, interesting.
Yep, so that feels a little bit...
Feels a bit older.
The original Ant-Man.
Oh, the first Ant-Man. Oh, wow.
Which was fun. Jurassic World.
Oh, I remember that, going to that premiere. That was seriously one of the most fun nights of my life, where it was at the... It was held at the IMAX in Melbourne, and they had like a party. You had drinks amongst the skeletons, because the IMAX is connected to the museum, so you're standing amongst all these dinosaurs to have drinks.
Man, I hope the Melbourne, for everyone who lives in Melbourne, and if you work at the Melbourne IMAX, I hope you've gotten your shit together, because my fury at that place, the last three times I went there, it fucked up every time, and not just broke down. Like, I remember watching Dunkirk and a trailer
in the middle of the movie.
In the middle of the movie. And you know what? Those tickets are expensive. You gotta pay them back. Anyway, a little movie called Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Wow, that was that year. These are all not coalescing for me as happening at the same time. This is bizarre.
Hey, I was reading this and I was confused. Yeah. Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh my God. See, that feels more recent than... Yeah.
Yeah. Creed.
Oh, yes, your favourite. You love Creed.
Yeah, with the best acting by Sylvester Stallone in any movie, with the son that I wish I had, Michael B. Jordan. Spectre.
Oh.
And I know. That's how I felt when I read that as well. And weirdly, the only Hunger Games movie I haven't seen, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2. And it came out. I was ready to see it. I enjoyed all the rest of them, and then I moved from Sydney, moved from Melbourne to Sydney, yeah. and it came out just as I was moving, and I just never got to it, and I've never gotten around to watching it, so I have no idea how it ends.
So this is when we were both kind of moving up here. Wow.
Yeah.
I watched all of the Hunger Games
2015.
Once. As like a, I'd seen the first one at the cinema, and then I don't think I saw another one. So I decided, they're all on the streaming. I'll have a look at them. And
yeah.
I think I was on my phone for most of the second one. Like, it just gets a bit, you know. Like, Marjorie from Game of Thrones was in it, and I like her, and I couldn't even be bothered.
Right.
Natalie
Did it
Dormer.
End well?
I don't know. I don't remember. Well, I think there was an uprising of some description. Against
yeah,
Donald
sure,
Sutherland.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I like Jennifer Lawrence. It's weird how everyone loved Jennifer Lawrence and then we decided no to Jennifer Lawrence and now it seems like she's kind of coming back.
You know what the weird thing was with that whole Hunger Games thing was how many others they made. Like the Maze Runner ones and the Divergent ones and
yeah.
all of that. And you're just like... Really? Like, just one movie did really well? Do you really think the rest of these are going to be okay? And, like, big stars like Kate Winslet signing up for them, like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
This is, give me some cash.
Those young adult movies of children trying to save the world seemed like it was kind of neck and neck with superhero movies for a while.
Was Mortal Engines one of those? Or whatever it was called?
Yep. That's a steampunk one, isn't it?
There was the...
I think...
What was the other one? There was another one that ended up on Netflix as a TV series. I can't remember. There were just so many of them back then.
Well, they were also trying to do the Harry Potter kind of movies. Like, there wasn't there, like, Percy Numbnuts and the Spear of... Forgetfulness or something.
So, that's been a topic on the show. Someone loves those books. They're doing those as a series at Disney Plus. And I think the guy who writes them, who didn't like the movies, is kind of forcing himself to be involved in them. So they're better.
Okay.
But from what I understand, the books aren't that great anyway.
That's funny. Segment All-Star Guests. So we get Jeremy Renner, Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Sean Harris, Tom Hollander, Alec Baldwin, Simon McBurney, and Rebecca Ferguson.
Oh, she's so good.
So good. We will talk more about her. And last segment to start off with, Cruising Around the Mission. These are the movies Tom Cruise made before and after. So in 2013, you get Oblivion. I like Oblivion too.
It's Joseph Kosinski, isn't it, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, it's a good film. 2014, Edge of Tomorrow, another good film.
I love that film too.
Yeah. 2016, Jack Reacher, Never Go Back.
Now, I enjoyed that film, but he's not Jack Reacher in like any way, shape or form.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
It's just badly cast.
Yeah. If that was a movie just called Never Go Back and he was playing a different character like Jack Reacher around.
Jack Reacher around.
Right, that would be better. Have you read the new Jack Reacher around novel?
Jack Reacher around.
Never Look Back.
Oh
that's, my
God,
that's the name
that's
of it.
Probably a porn somewhere.
If it's not, and there are any porn producers listening to this podcast, can I say on behalf of Adam and I, you're welcome. Take it.
I don't think they
give us some Jack Reach around.
I've not seen a porn with a plot in a very long time.
I know, you just need a title, right?
It's on the phone. Just like, what's this?
Yeah.
It's on Twitter. Like, we don't need a whole movie anymore. Jack Reach around. That's a great porn
Jack
name,
Reach
though.
Around.
I'm Jack it Reach is. Around.
Yeah. Don't look back. Literally, don't. Ruins the magic. and then in 2017, how's this for a weird year from Tom Cruise? The Mummy.
Oh yeah.
And American Made.
Which I enjoyed. We saw that.
Yeah, I didn't mind American Made. I thought that was... I felt like that was the last time he tried to play something different.
Yeah, he was great in that, though. Just really energetic and fun. I think The Mummy fell into the same stupid hole as The Citadel, whatever it's called, in announcing a huge slate of movies that are all vaguely interrelated, and you're like, don't do that until one's been a success. Like, have the plan, sure. Have it up your sleeve as something you're going to do if this first one is a success. But don't go out and say, we're going to do this, that, the other thing, and they're all going to be, it's like, and then no one goes to The Mummy, and you're like, oh. Yeah.
Oh, we really spend a lot of money on that photo shoot for nothing.
Because there was, like, what was linked with The Mummy? There was The Mummy.
Well, I think Russell Crowe was going to be Dr.
That's
Jekyll.
That's right.
Because that's what he is in that. And then, actually, let's have a look. I know that
The Invisible Man was meant to be part of it, and Lee Whannell...
Johnny Depp.
Yeah. But, no, yeah, Lee Whannell got a hold of it and did his fun thing with it, like making it a more of a vehicle for Elizabeth Moss. And that's a great, fun film. But that was, originally part of that whole stupid Universal Monsters thing. Were they going to do a Dracula? Yeah. Was that...
They were going to do a Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh.
Remember that? I think that was going to be...
Charlize Theron.
No. I think that was going to be Angelina Jolie.
Oh, yeah. She's been looking for a franchise. She was Maleficent for a little while. She tried to horn in on the Marvel business in a movie where she was confusing and killed people for no good reason.
That's the one. And... I think Javier Bardem was going to be...
The Wolfman.
Frankenstein's monster, according to this.
Who's the Wolfman then? There's a Wolfman.
There's got to be a Wolfman. It doesn't seem to be a Wolfman. I'm just looking this up now. But, how funny.
Yeah, ridiculous. I didn't know that Kong Skull Island movie was part of a whole big,
Monster Island.
Yeah. And so when I left before the end of the movie and didn't see that there was an after credit sequence and someone told me there was one there, I was like, oh, cool. Well, that's fun. But, at least it wasn't a huge announcement 3 weeks before they released, the first one.
Yeah. Well, even Iron Man with the Avengers, that was just an Easter egg kind of.
It wasn't in the movie when I saw it. The first time, because we did an interview with Robert Downey Jr., so I saw a preview of it like a couple of weeks before a little theaterette. You know that little theaterette in West Melbourne we used to go to? And yet that was not there. Like, that was only attached to the release version. So no reviewers, no one saw that until it was only people who went to the movies and saw that in the cinema. So that I found interesting because, I went back again. I went, oh, this movie's great. We've got to go. And then was like, oh, what's this bit? This wasn't in before.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson come from.
Yeah, you're better off just, laying some trails. And if the trails don't get picked up, they were just little bits for the fans. And if they do get picked up, you go, great.
Like, do it stealthily.
Yes. Well, this is the infamous Mission Impossible film that begins with Crazy Tom hanging from the side of a plane. And we can talk about that. But what I've found most interesting is that right from the get-go, this film feels more like an ensemble piece.
Yes.
And did you notice that this time?
It's like Christopher McQuarrie has gone, okay, I've watched all the other ones. It needs to start with a big action set piece because Tom wants to do something stupid.
Great.
I'll write that in. Even Tom can come to him and say, I'm going to hang off the side of a plane. He's like, fine, we'll pop that at the start and we won't really explain it. But we'll explain it more than you hanging off the side of a mountain in the second one.
Right. It's so funny. It's such a funny start.
And he's also had a look at the cast and gone, we've had a couple of characters who have had nothing to do and have been great performers. So let's give everybody something to do. And because you don't want people like Tom Wilkinson turning up for 2 minutes to get shot in the head. Like, everyone needs something to do. If you're going to call these favors in, Also, I guess, you know, we're in a time where Tom's kind of been on the nose. Like, those films before this that you mentioned had not been huge successes. Yeah. And this was also apparently, from what I understand, was not really a go until the Chinese just threw money at it. Like, it was like, oh, no, these are successful in China because you barely mention us and it's fine.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
So, I think Macquarie is such a great screenwriter that, you know, I mean, look at, you know, Top Gun Maverick. It's like by the numbers thing, but he just kind of invests just little moments with they just seem to go that extra mile. Like they, you know.
Yeah.
So I've been watching The Sopranos for work and I'm just like, oh, yeah. Each one feels like a little movie. Like, great character
work. I still get a kick out of that opening with him on the side of the plane. It's so funny.
Also,
he's more comedic too, yeah, right?
But also how much of it is Benji trying not to explain what's happening?
Oh, yeah.
Like
Peg's a gun in this.
Like trying not to relay back what is actually happening. It's like, oh, yeah, he's on it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a really fun start. Even the way he leaves the plane is more comedic. It's a little bit like Once Upon a Time, I reckon. Like Mission Impossible 2, it would have been a wink, and now it's a little bit like a... I don't know if this is a good idea.
Mission Impossible 2, it would have been a slow-motion hair toss, because he also had that wacky hair back then, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Would have been a slow-motion hair toss and a kind of a...
Through 37 dubs. Yeah.
Kind of a smarmy eyebrow.
Yeah. There's a little subtle shift into the more comedic sides of him, and it's funny. I think there's that in Top Gun as well. Like there's, you know, there's him looking like after the planes exploded. And, it's Jennifer Connelly taking advantage of him. You know, it's him trying to sneak off and being caught by the daughter.
That is a great moment. Like that is just a perfect moment. Like, it's so good. Ugh.
Yeah. So he's kind of got, you know, it's a smart move to get this side of him out, especially with him being not quite the star that he was previously. Yeah. It's a little reinvention, not too much. I also enjoyed that they've continued the storyline from the previous film where the agent at the record store knows the stories of Ethan Hunt. And do you like Ethan as a man of mystery?
Yeah, I kind of like... well, I mean, you can't get to a fifth film and not have what he's done in the previous four somehow get out amongst... Like, even just the people who work there would know.
Yeah, at least other super spies.
Yeah. Like, it's because normally it's like someone comes up and says, oh, yeah, the name is Bond, James Bond. It's like, okay, cool. But you're like, there's like 27 movies of you behaving like a lunatic and driving through the streets of Venice on a motorized gondola. It's a hovercraft. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
He's hung off several things very high in the air. It would have gotten around. Like, inside the agency, if nowhere else. Like, he has, like, a mystique about him. You can't pretend it's not there.
No, it's good. I like it. And then, of course, you know, she knows who he is, and then it's a double twist. Ethan isn't receiving orders from IMF. It's the Syndicate, a secret organization that Ethan has been tailing for a while that has set him up. I love the idea of the Syndicate, a consortium of rogue agents from various international agencies, but they fail to kill Ethan when they have him in their sights. And this always frustrated me, but which rogue agent do you think suggested this plan? Because to me, I'm guessing it's someone who worked with Dr. Evil.
Oh, no, because I completely bought into this. I bought into this because everyone has been converted. Like, you know, all these other agents have been converted. So maybe it's just like for them, it's a Hail Mary. They're like, he's too patriotic. Yeah. He's not going to come over, but we could give it a shot. Like, you know, yeah. It's like betting on Powerball. Like, it's, you know, I probably won't win the 100 million, but I'm putting it on.
Yeah, you might as well be in with, you know, you're with the syndicate already, so you might as well be in it to win,
like,
it, right?
If we can get Ethan Hunt, like, we're home and host. So I kind of buy into them not killing him just because it's like, oh, if we can do it, cross your fingers.
I know. It's a good scene, though. Yeah.
So good. Although it's a bit terrifying, like that poor girl turns up, you're like, oh, who's this radiant girl? Oh, no, bye.
Oh, yeah. She is radiant. I may have looked her up anyway, like some kind of dirty perv. But,
I am not a dirty perv, like, when it comes to ladies, but I was like, oh, wow, who's she? She's, oh, no, bye.
Yeah. I was like, she's this movie's Josh Holloway. She is. Like, what are you doing? What a waste. Of course, the IMF is disbanded and absorbed into the CIA. How much does an agency have to achieve before it is finally trusted? That's what I want to know. Like, I love them being on the outs, because it raises the stakes, because otherwise it implies that they have too much going for them. But it is funny. It's like being in a relationship with someone and you do 50 good things, and then you forget their cousin's birthday, and you are fucking gonna get a divorce.
You forget to put the toilet seat down one time.
One time.
I've put it down 100 times. Like, why just this one time?
Yeah.
Someone rang the doorbell. Come on.
Yep. You forgot to flush. Just one time. I was on Instagram. I was looking at clips of Michael Jordan in the 90s, and I forgot. Anyway,
but yeah, it is funny. I found it very interesting that it had the same sort of energy as the Lawrence Fishburne iteration of this agency. Like, they brought him in to fix everything up. Clearly, that hasn't worked. So they've brought in Alec Baldwin to just absorb it.
I would have liked to have seen Fishburne back. I'd like to have seen Hopkins back. Like, you know, but they motor through them. But it's funny, as Ethan becomes more comedic, it seems to coalesce more as an ongoing storyline as well, doesn't it? We next see the captured Ethan being tortured by an ex-KGB agent, Yannick Winter, a.k.a. the Bone Doctor. Didn't we see him at the Peel once?
I kind of, given how many big stars they get in these movies, I'm like, couldn't you have gotten someone more memorable for the Bone Doctor?
Like, yeah, I know. I was a bit bummed out about that.
Somebody's
going
to have fun with being called the Bone Doctor.
Yeah, someone who's going to fucking be chewing up the scenery with it, right?
Instead, anyway, we got generic henchman number 42.
Yeah. Why give him a good name? Just make him the generic henchman.
You know who would have been good as the Bone Doctor? Bautista.
Oh, yeah.
Who obviously was very busy doing that James Bond film that year.
Yeah, he would have been good too. Like, he's a good size for, you know, that's one of the understated parts of Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yes.
He's really good. He's really kind of heartbreaking, and you do worry that Ryan Gosling's pretty face is going to be
mad. Put him right through a wall. Oh, there he does. He does.
Yeah, there it is.
Right through a wall.
Bautista would have been great. I wish Bautista had been the Bone Doctor. That would have been better than Spectre.
Yeah, Spectre. Like, you know, he was fine. I actually enjoyed that once I knew it was going to be disappointing, if that makes sense. Because I was so disappointed by it the first time when I watched it again. Not that long ago, I was like, oh, Bautista's in this. I like him. And, like, I was finding joy in little moments, but,
right.
It's still hard work.
So it's such a bummer, because Skyfall's
so great.
You know, like, if we're never going to get a Nolan Bond movie, that's the closest thing. And then Spectre. You know what? Everyone doesn't have to be related. It's my argument about Star Wars a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's like, mate, this could have been set in Adelaide. Like, everyone knows it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Each other, everyone's related, everyone's dated, everyone's kissed their sister. I'm allowed to say that I'm from Adelaide and I don't have a sister anyway. So this is where we meet
Isla Faust.
Space Adelaide. Oh yeah, I should write a series called Space Adelaide. set a few years ago in a city just over there.
Space Adelaide. A lot of space if you go too far out of town.
It's clearly quite nice. So we meet Isla Faust. That's how you pronounce her name, isn't it? Is it? Yeah. And as played by Rebecca Ferguson, a disavowed MI6 agent who helps Ethan escape. Let's just get to it. Where does she rank in the Mission Impossible series of all characters for you? Because I reckon she's right at the top for me.
She's almost better than Ethan.
Yes. Yeah. I agree.
Like, she's cheeky, she's dynamic, she's exciting, she's beautiful. Yeah, she's certainly a lot better than Paula Patton.
Hey. Like, I'm jumping ahead here but that moment where she is in her hiding place at the opera and she's getting her rifle ready and you can just see the way she shot with her leg out wearing that yellow dress. Like, that's one of the hottest things that's ever happened in a Tom Cruise movie. And don't get me wrong, the previous hottest thing that's happened in this series was him with a floppy disk in his mouth.
You're obsessed with this floppy disk.
Look, it might be the words, to be honest.
Tom Cruise with a mouthful of floppy disk.
Nothing sus. It's fine.
Don't look back.
Oh man. You know, look, to everyone listening, I just need to let you know that there is a distinct possibility that Adam and I are going to be obsessed with Jack Reach around for quite
Don't
a while.
Look back.
Don't look back. Oh, far out. Anyway.
We've broken the podcast.
We've broken it, yeah. We're trying to put it back together. But she is amazing. Magnificent right from the get-go. And she's so... it's interesting. I find her stunning to look at, but she is... unlike anyone else, and I think that's part of what makes her stunning. Like watching Silo as well, she's just
so
got
good.
Like, yeah, her features are so sharp and her own as
you
well.
You know what?
And she's
the thing
great.
She does, I think, as an actor, and I think Edie Falco does this a lot as well, where you can see them thinking, like you can see the thought process of the character. It's like I listened to a podcast once with, I think it was, is it Eric Roth who wrote the Dune screenplay and Forrest Gump, and, you know, he's been a writer for a long time, and he'd written like this full page of dialogue for Al Pacino, and Al Pacino's read it and he's gone, yep. Now I could do that with a look. And he's gone, it's like a whole page.
Right.
And then they've done the scene and Pacino's done a look and he's gone, oh, fuck, he can do that with a look.
Right.
And some actors just like, but yeah, because I've been watching a lot of Carmela Soprano just not saying anything and absolutely understanding what is happening in that scene. And I think Rebecca Ferguson is really skilled at... you know, you see her go through about three or four things in one moment without saying a word and you're like, oh, yeah, I understand everything that's happening here. I'm totally on board.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's really good at that type of acting.
You know, I just saw a clip earlier today of Andrew Scott doing the, I think it's the opening to Romeo and Juliet. and it's really slow.
Yeah,
because he's thinking about what he's going to say next, and he's broken it down into almost like four words per delivery, and it's you know, it's like getting back to Pacino. It's the, you know, they wanted to cut him from The Godfather, but when the scene where he shoots Sollozzo and you see everything that's going on in his eyes.
Yeah, I don't want to be part of the family, but I've got to do this because, you know, like, it's just, all of that happens. You know who else is really good at that? Is Anna Torv, is another actor who I have seen play about 14 different things in a scene in between someone else speaking and not actually saying anything out loud. And you're like, oh, wow. Like, there's a couple of moments of her in The Last of Us where you're like, oh my God, I feel like I've just had your entire backstory and you've not said a word.
It's great. No, I reckon that's a good call on Rebecca Ferguson. She's there's always, all the way through this movie, you know, she's trying to juggle so many things, and you can see her doing it, but sometimes you see it in movies and it's like, That person knows that you're bullshitting. Yes. You know, some people can be too obvious. It's like, I'm just going to go and check. And you're like, you're hiding something, you know? Yeah, we get it, mate. We get it.
You're a bullshit artist.
Yeah, you're acting so bad, you're making me hate that other character for not realizing you're a fuckhead.
Yes. But yeah, all through this, she seems, you know, somewhat inscrutable, but you know she's juggling about four different things. Like, it feels, and then, you know, as the movie plays out, you're like, oh, you really were juggling all those things.
Yeah, absolutely. The CIA go after Hunt because, of course, now that he's been disavowed and he has to be on the run, and it's he pulls a tricky trick on them as to where he really is. It's a little Silence of the Lambs moment where
they've all turned up to the wrong place.
It's great. He passes information about the syndicate on to Benji, who is Benji having to work at the CIA and be bored shitless, and then having Ethan get in touch with him is really entertaining. And I also love that he's tricked into attending the Vienna State Opera and literally to help Ethan out, literally thinks he's won a prize. And it's quite surprised when
I'm not going to get to go to the opera.
I think I said this earlier, but I think Peg really steps up in this movie.
Yeah, and he's been great before now.
But I think it's what you said about Macquarie going, you've got all these other good actors. Yeah. Let's do some good. Let them cook. Get them in the kitchen.
I mean, yes for Peg, but I feel like he's shortchanged Renner quite a lot here.
Oh, I will get to Renner in a sec. Anyway. It's I don't know. You know what? That's my one criticism of the film, is that I think Renner was so good in the last one, and he's a little bit reduced to the lines they're giving him and the action they're giving him to do are like well below his pay grade, because he should be up there in the action as well.
I mean, I think he really sparks well off Alec Baldwin in those scenes.
Oh, yeah, he's great. But he should be doing more.
Yeah. He shouldn't just be bolting together a box with Benji.
No, I know. I totally agree. It's the biggest flaw in the film. Though I kind of, you know, because he has to convince Luther, you know. Well, anyway, the whole scene at the opera is fantastic, right? So we have the multiple assassins attempting to kill the Austrian Chancellor.
Benji with his bit of paper that's got actually a computer.
Yeah, that's all great. There's the scene, it has a touch of the Indiana Jones fighting the big Nazi.
Yes.
With, once again, Ethan being a little bit comedic, you know, and being a bit outmatched is working for Tom Cruise as he gets older. I just don't think you can go wrong with opera in an action scene. Like, that was the, you know, the Pagliacci scene in The Untouchables was a big turning point for me in my... it was almost like the thing that upgraded me to how I enjoyed films was The Untouchables. And I just love it. I just think that whole scene, all the stands going up and down and not quite working out who's on whose side is, it's all thrilling. And it ends with them having to get away, and the Chancellor's car is blown up, and now the orders are out to kill Ethan and Benji. And that's when Brandt convinces Luther to find Ethan before the CIA does. So, like, I understand you need Brandt for that part. Yes. Like, you need someone who obviously is going to be believing in him, because if it's someone else, you're like, well, why does that person believe in him? You believe that it's Brandt, but still, you know, let him fight three people at once or something. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, he's a good action star. Renner's an interesting one. Like, Renner's just got this fascinating career where it's like it's awesome, and then it's big, and then it's like no one's using him properly, and then he nearly dies in a snowplow accident. Like, I just don't know where he goes.
Yeah. I feel like he's in this movie, he's Hawkeye again. And I guess, you know, he had a Hawkeye movie out that year. And maybe part of it was, oh, he's only available on these days, so let's not give him big action scenes, because we can only have him for like 4 weeks or whatever it is. Because he's got to go and shoot his bows and arrows somewhere.
That makes
sense.
And
he's a linchpin of Age of Ultron. There's the whole thing on his farm with his family. Like, it's a big Jeremy Renner movie. Maybe it was just a timing thing. It's like, we can have 4 days with Alec Baldwin, a couple of days,
seven days
to be with, to make a box.
This is great. Let's get him in. That's a good point. Maybe that's what it is.
And maybe that's just Macquarie just being really, again, a really skilled writer. It was like, I can't use him for the whole thing. I'll find something to do with
him.
Let's
use him. let's use him this way. Ethan and Benji find Isla in the pool. And that's an interesting scene, because she just kind of gets out in a way that doesn't really ogle her at all. And it doesn't... it's one of those moments where you go, this is quite clearly not a Bond movie. Do you think this is because the Mission Impossible movies are trying to be better than that? Or do you think it's because Tom doesn't think about women like that, so he wouldn't even suggest it? Do you think if it was the floppy disk in the pool, we would have ogled it when it came out of the water?
A long-lasting shot.
Jack, reach around.
Jeremy Renner was in the pool, different story.
Don't look back.
No, I think it's just, you know, they've already given her so much agency as a character that by the time it gets to here, it doesn't matter. Like, it's very different to Halle Berry in Die Another Day, who had a lot of agency up to that point, but still, you know, let's do the Ursula Andress thing again.
And then it happens in Casino Royale for the ladies. Yes. And the gay men, of course. I don't want to leave anyone out.
I think of myself as one of the ladies.
Yes, flick that hair. Flick that hair. We discover the big bad guy is a rogue MI6 agent brilliantly called Solomon Lane. Good name, right? Good name for a villain. There is a ledger with the names of all the syndicate leaders secure in a vault that cannot be broken into. And what this scene's great, isn't it? Like, I love Benji being excited about wearing a mask. feels a little bit... when he's, you know, you're showing the scenes of how he could wear the mask and it not working out, it feels a little bit Shaun of the Dead. You know, we'll go to the pub, we'll pick up your mum.
And then he'll be murdered horribly at the end.
I also found it really funny. I'd completely forgotten his nonchalant belief in all of Ethan's abilities. Yeah, he'll just hold his breath for nine minutes. It'll be fine.
He'll break a world record. Like, he'll be fine. Which he did on this film, didn't he, Tom Cruise? Isn't this the one where he held his breath for a ridiculous amount of time?
Oh, yeah. I've got some stuff in the squid bits for you about that crazy stuff. All this water stuff makes me super panicky.
Oh, yeah, because you're afraid of water.
I'm not into it. Not into it. So it's good for the scene. Like, it's good for the... Like, I do Hey, get that done. Hey, swinging arm that just hit you. That is not good. And I love that Isla rescues Ethan. Yeah. Like, I love that he actually wouldn't have gotten out of there.
Even that scene of her stripping down to jump in the pool, it's like us seeing her swimming earlier is not titillating because it's actually set up for this moment to go, oh, no, she's a good swimmer. We've seen her swimming.
She can do this.
She'll be fine. In
yep.
Like, it's...
Yep.
I think that's really, you know... I think Macquarie is kind of... There are some choices he could have made that could have been terrible, and he's been really, really restrained in this.
Yeah. No, it's really impressive. He also dives into a massive gushing hole of water. That's impressive as well.
That's the third sequel to Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher, our gushing hole of water. The sequel to Double Back.
Right in the golden eye.
Far
up the wet chute.
Jack Reacher around up the wet chute. The sequel, don't look back.
Look back.
Oh, shit. So Isla does the dirty and races off with the ledger with members of the syndicate in pursuit. Now we have a wild chase with Ethan and Benji in one car, Isla on a motorbike, the syndicate on heaps of motorbikes. Brant and Luther are all in pursuit. Yeah. And what do you think of this action
this.
Scene?
Because it's bonkers and it's fun. And And for the first time in a long time, I think, watching this film, I was like, I don't know if it's CGI, but I don't care.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of films I'd seen up to this point, I'm like, yeah, there's more, you know. Like, I saw The Flash this week, and some of the people are CGI in that. Like, just in a conversation.
Yeah, that's
like,
weird.
Like, why are you CGI? Like, just... but, yeah.
So weird.
But, yeah, I just was excited because I love a good action sequence. It's like, did you come with me to see Gemini Man?
No, I've never seen Gemini.
So the action sequences in that are blisteringly good, like really fun. Mm. And the rest of the film is very dull. But yeah, I love a good, you know, chase on a motorbike and lots of motorbikes.
And yeah.
And the giant four-wheel drive that Jeremy Renner complains about. Why did you get this one?
Oh, yeah. A little Austin Powers in the turnaround, right? That's funny. I love motorbikes in action scenes as well. That goes back to Steve McQueen and The Great Escape. So that's where my love of that comes from. Once again, comedic Ethan tries to jump over the car and he's not quite right, which also ups the ante in the car chase because he's not on top of his game. My question for you is, do you think Tom Cruise really smashed that car with Peg in it and is Peg acting?
I mean, maybe not. Like Tom loves a bit of a stunt, and maybe it's like, "Are you in the stunt with me? You're in the stunt with me. You're in the okay."
Yeah. Oh my god, you'd be so terrified. Maybe that was why Renner's Renner's contract was
keep me away from the.
I'm just going to build a box. Yeah, I don't want to be in any stunts that I don't know are coming.
He's going to make me do it.
So Benji's made a copy of all the data in the ledger that Isla drops off with her MI6 handler, but they're unable to open it. So Isla doesn't realize her handler wipes the ledger. And then the version that Benji and Ethan have can only be opened with the Prime Minister of England's biometrics. So now they have to get in touch with Isla and they have to work out how they can do this. But Benji has been kidnapped.
No.
And it also looks like Brant has turned on Ethan by informing Alec Baldwin's Hunley about what is going on. And which there's a part of this that is my favorite. So I'm wondering all of this section, is there any actor that really stands out to you, or do you want me to tell you who
I
love?
Do you love Tom Hollander more than anything?
I do love Tom Hollander, but I really enjoy Baldwin in all of this.
He is having way more fun than he should.
Yeah.
Playing a stuffy bureaucrat.
Yeah, he's really good. He's the great thing about him is he's a big, he's a big presence. Huge. So he does feel like he's in command, but because he's got comedic chops, his ability to switch sides and work out how to make it work for him very quickly is very funny. Were you worried about Benji with the bomb?
Look, I loved that because normally it's the beautiful woman who has a bomb strapped to her and is about to be fridged. Mm. Like it's such a great thing that they've got a male character as the vulnerable one, the one who's been captured, and also that we don't even question that Tom would try and save him. Like you don't have a moment where it's like, oh, it's just another man. He'll let him blow up. If it was Felix in a James Bond movie, it's like, and I trusted him not let Felix blow up.
No, God be with you. He'd feel much more comfortable using Felix's death as motivation for doing anything in the next movie rather than actually saving him.
I mean, Felix does get eaten by a shark in one of the movies, in the Timothy Dalton one.
Right. He's been killed a few times,
Felix
hasn't he?
Felix gets offed a lot. Right.
It's. I also love that. Benji has to relay what's being said to him from Solomon. But I also love that he's sometimes saying things that he's saying, and pointing it out. I love Ethan's gambit that he's memorized. He's wiped the data, but he's memorized it all. And once again, anyone else, you'd go, come on. But then you're like, I feel like Ethan Hunt may have probably memorized
all
of this.
And also Tom Cruise probably did. He's like, okay, I want to hang off the side of a plane. Also, I'm going to memorize 400 bank account numbers. Yeah.
It's great. Good chase action scenes as well, which is fun. Rebecca Ferguson is once again a superstar. And in the end, they capture Lane in a gas box, thus returning to the start of the film. And Huntley gets to pretend to the Senate he was working alongside the IMF
I was doing this. It was a secret.
Yeah. It's a great ending,
isn't
it?
It's very fun.
The box is great. Yeah. And everyone's standing around him like it's like a boy band about to launch into a song.
Because you see them doing it. You see them like, what are they doing? What's going on? And then when it's revealed, it's like, oh, yay.
That's what they were doing. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Because the way that it's not focused on too much. There's other things going on. Also, I particularly like the little touch of the strains of Ness and Dorma playing as Isla leaves. I really like the Syndicate. How do you rate them compared to other evil groups?
Well, it's kind of nice to have a made up enemy, especially when you're being funded by a gigantic country that could very well be, an evil other in this universe. Having something made up, it's like, oh, we don't have to worry about. We're not maligning any particular people or ideologies.
Yep.
It's just, dissatisfied spies. Like, it's almost like some sort of evil union of spies.
Yeah, it's great. How does this relate to Spectre? Who are Spectre?
Spectre is are a bunch of bad nations.
Who've gotten
together to do naughty things.
Yeah, and in Marvel, Hydra are just the Nazis, but worse, because they do the double Zig Heil. In Star Wars, it's Black Sun, is that right? I think Black Sun is the gangster kind of secret society.
I mean, there's the whole empire.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but they're the bureaucrats kind of thing. And then I guess it's Chaos.
Chaos.
Get Smart.
Oh, my God. I love Chaos.
A couple of segments to finish off with. Who and how? Which character do you think you would be and how would you react in their place?
I think I'm probably... I don't know how I got there, but I'm the Prime Minister of England. I'm fully Tom Hollander, having no fucking idea what's going on, but still being weirdly... How am I in the middle of this? Why is it my fault?
Yeah. Why am I being drugged at this precise moment? I reckon for this one, I'd be Benji. Yep. I'd gladly throw Ethan into all sorts of danger, and I would also be captured and have bombs strapped to me. Like, there's no doubt about it. So this is a first, segment zero charisma. I kind of like everyone in this. I guess it's the bone doctor who's the worst.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think everyone's great. Like, the girl in the record shop who barely has a scene is compelling. Like,
Hermione Caulfield. Like, everyone's great. I looked her up.
I think, if I had to, I would say that sometimes Baldwin errs on the side of cartoony. When he's being, you know, I'm a very important man who's making all the wrong decisions, and I can tell that. And Renner doesn't have much to do, but he's just solid in, you know, what he does do in the film. So, but they're still both compelling. Like, there's nothing, no one's really... And the Bone Doctor was fine. Like, you know, there was nothing wrong with him. He was just...
No, it's just that he had a great name and didn't do anything with it.
It's just a giant henchman. It was just, let's cast someone who's twice the size of Tom Cruise to really look intimidating.
Better or worse, ruin or improve the movie with one decision. Mine was give Brenner more action scenes. That's pretty much
I miss Giacchino on the music. Joe Kramer, who did the score for this one, has worked a lot with Christopher McQuarrie. He did Way of the Gun and Jack Reach Around. Don't look back. And now he works, he does a lot of scores for Big Finish, who do like Doctor Who radio plays and stuff. Okay. Like, he does their music suites and things like that. Because I feel like he's kind of caught as a composer in this between the theme music from the 60s show and the great slab of Puccini that's going on while they're fighting in the opera house. And I don't know. So my big change would have been maybe a different opera. I feel like Nessun Dorma has been used so much for so many things.
Oh, yeah.
It's such an indelible piece of music that it kind of feels a bit cloying at times. Like, you know, when it comes back in, I'm just like, I would have preferred maybe, like, I think even Madama Butterfly is probably a bit overused as well. But, yeah, it just, like, obviously it was written...
The Book of Mormon?
Book of Mormon would have been great. The Everybody Has AIDS song keeps referring.
I do get what you mean, though. Like, I hadn't really thought about that because I haven't really watched anything with any opera in it for a while. But Nessun Dorma is probably, if you are into opera, it's a bit like...
Yeah, but also it just feels a bit on the nose. Like, it just... Like, I don't know. I feel like they haven't really gone, okay, what's this story about? Let's find an opera that kind of fits it. Like, let's have an opera about betrayal or an opera about something. Like, and also, like, Turandot that it comes from was not finished. Like, it was an unfinished opera. Like, a couple of different people have had a crack at the ending, which is why it keeps getting performed. But, I don't know. And also, I mean, it's a risky call putting it in there because it's quite offensive to the Chinese who financed this film.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that's my only thing. It just like, it was almost like they're going, we'll do a scene in an opera house. And yeah, I don't think enough thought was put into what's the resonance of the music from that opera going to be in the film later on. And maybe he didn't expect Kramer to pick up on the music cues or use the music as, you know, for that scene. Because you could have composed your own music for that and just pretended that the opera wasn't happening kind of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. I just would have chosen a different opera. I don't know what opera I would have chosen. But, yeah, just something. It just felt like too much. Like, it was just like, oh, again with the Nessun Dorma.
I'm trying to think of what operas would have been
the Mikado.
Phantom of the Opera.
Some Gilbert and Sullivan light operetta.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
They're doing Chicago downstairs.
Yeah, it'll be great. So the Top Gun Maverick emotional scale, and to be honest, I just felt excitement and laughter, and I don't buy that Isla would be interested in Ethan in any way, but I totally get why Mad Tom might turn around twice.
for a reach around.
I've got some quick squid bits for you, just a few. Funnily enough, not a lot actually seemed to be that much on the internet, or maybe I was a bit lazy. But Brad Bird went on to make Tomorrowland, which allowed Christopher Macquarie to be promoted to director for this film. Prior to this movie, Macquarie and Cruise worked on Jack Reacheround and Edge of Tomorrow. Macquarie and Cruise struggled to find who could play Isla Faust and then had one last look through all the tapes they had. That's when they remembered Ferguson and called her to ask her to take on the role. So that's interesting. The whole film was plagued with time issues, and at one point production was shut down so the filmmaker could fix the second half of the script. Even though it struggled with delays, they brought the film forward by 5 months to avoid the December release of Star Wars The Force
Awakens.
That's
a very sensible idea. That film was a monster.
It was. Funnily enough, I enjoyed it. Like, I feel like the first time I watched it, I really enjoyed it. And the second time I watched it, I didn't enjoy it as much, but it was still good. And the third time I saw it, I was like, oh, this is a bit boring. And then it's like the rest of the trilogy reverberated backwards in time, and now I kind of think it's a bit shit. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. The final sequence of the film to be completed was the underwater scene. Macquarie realized it needed something and hit upon the idea of Cruise making muffled noises, which suggested he was struggling to breathe. So they weren't in those scenes to begin with. Cruise clung to the outside of the plane in the air 8 times before they hit the perfect shot. 8 times.
8 times. I mean, I don't know if you've watched him go off the edge of the cliff from this upcoming movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's like a 10-minute behind-the-scenes sequence, and it's just like...
Yeah.
They seem to do that for a whole week.
it's crazy. The underwater scene was filmed in one take. Cruise trained to be able to hold his breath for 3 minutes, although stuntman Wade Eastwood claims Cruise held his breath for just over 6 minutes. Ooh. And there was a little goof. Metal detectors would only prevent infiltrators from using oxygen tanks made of metal. They could have made one out of plastic.
They could have.
They could have gotten in. Well, that's not as much fun, is it? No. last segment, sum it up. What does this movie mean to you?
Look, I really enjoyed it. It is weirdly forgettable, like... You watch it and you're like, oh, that's right. I forgot all this happened in this movie.
I forgot heaps
and
about
then, it. I watched it and I was like, oh, this is great. And then I went to make my notes and I'm like, what happened in this movie? You watched it 2 days ago. I should have done the notes straight away.
there's literally two things I remember. Him hanging off the side of a plane and the scene in the opera with Rebecca Ferguson's leg.
That's, yeah. All I remembered was there was, he hung off a plane and there was an opera. And he went for a swim.
He went for a swim. Little swim. I forgot the swim bit.
I know, I always remember the bits where they try to top the hanging from the ceiling in the first one. Like, because every movie they try and do it and they're never quite as good. And that was the one from this one. Like the one where he... goes running down the top of the building after the fulcrum, and you're like, yeah, no, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're hanging on the side of the building. Like, there's always one.
Yeah. He's always hanging.
And it's always to get into some server room somewhere. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Convinced that Rogue One is a rejected Mission Impossible script when they're climbing up to get the disc out of the thing.
Yeah. So weird. I do like that this feels more like an ensemble piece, though. That is probably... and I think Isla Faust for the win for me. Look, I'm giving this 4 Tom Cruise jaw flexes out of 5.
Well, yeah, I'm the same. Very taut, fun, great performances, 4.5. Like, it's just... I just don't know why it's not... I don't know why it doesn't stick in my head.
Maybe it's because that first scene's so ridiculous that... Do you know what I mean? It's like lots of fun things happen for the rest of the film, but you're too busy thinking, how did his wig stay up?
I will say, though, like a lot of the beats kind of surprised me. Like, you know, I forgot that the whole syndicate thing was an invention of the government and not meant to have started, but then it started and it's like, well, what is going on? Like, I really enjoyed all that. But yeah, it's fun. It's, you know, it's mad.
Yeah, that's it. It's fun. It's mad. He's insane. She's great.
Yeah.
Ensemble piece. It's what you want.
And it's really interesting that it's just Christopher McQuarrie here on in, like that we're not mixing up directors and writers anymore. It's just like Tom's gone, no, I trust this guy. He lets me do stupid stunts. And he manages to find a way to put them in the movie that makes sense.
Yep. So my guy is sticking around, as are we. Adam, where can people find you at the moment? What are you up to?
Adam Richard has a theory every day talking about Doctor Who, sometimes Star Trek, sometimes, I don't know, talked about The Flash this week for no good reason. I'll talk about all sorts of things. But also, I am a memoir where we listen to Mariah Carey albums and sometimes J-Lo albums.
Yeah. So just quickly with Doctor Who, who's the little fella who's going to be on Doctor Who?
He's a BAFTA award-winning actor who don't really know the character or what's going on. They're revealing a lot of things. They're basically, every time they reveal someone, it's because they're filming something in the street and someone will take a photo and it'll get out. So
is he always on a Segway, or was he just in the advert on in the picture they released on a Segway?
Maybe he's an evil Segway genius.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the new canine. Yeah. Yeah, perfect. All right. Thank you for that. I'm off to work on the synopsis for Jack Reach Around Don't Look Back, and I'm ready to sell it to the highest bidder.
Don't you mean the lowest bidder?
Thanks to Adam for joining me on this very special edition of Jack Reach Around. Mission Impossible. A big thank you. Don't look back. A big thank you to our Patreon subscriber for the episode, Liz. I hope you enjoyed today's episode as well. Remember, you can sign up for Patreon over at patreon.com/Justin Hamilton, or a top review at Apple Podcasts will help people find all the good work we're doing over here. Either or is greatly appreciated. I hope you're well, and I look forward to having your company next week. Until then.